supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Whole.
Another simple exercise Newcomb suggests is to work at being an attentive passenger when someone else is behind the wheel. I'm Mike and Scott, WHYY News.
In sports, the Flyers beat the Canadiens 3-1. They skate against the Rangers today at 2. This is WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, I'm always warning you not to prune in the fall. But how does that intersect with the need to go out and harvest some holiday greenery? I'll explain how to do such a thing safely in detail when we get to the question of the week. We'll also welcome back our old friend Pat Stone, editor of Green Prints, the Weeders Digest, to discuss a big award his little gardening magazine has just won. Well, that's a lot to do. We better get right to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Ray, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, I'm so glad to talk to you. I need some help here. I pruned my girlfriend's rose bushes, and I'm worried that I pruned them too low or took too much off.
Where are you, Ray?
I'm in the northeastern part of Philadelphia.
I should have asked, where are you other than the doghouse?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So you pruned roses in the Philadelphia area when?
About 3 days ago.
So you pruned roses in Philadelphia in November?
Yes.
Okay. What were you thinking? Was she home?
Yes, she was, and I figured I'd be doing her a favor because they were getting really, you know, they were starting to go off the wall really high, and I figured I'll prune them and then get them all ready for the winter.
Did she know you were going out to prune them?
She didn't really know. I said something prior to that a couple weeks before, but
went
ahead and did it.
Okay. So, this is your girlfriend, right?
Yes.
Okay. Whatever you were planning to get her for the holidays is now doubled. We're talking keep up the supply of dark chocolate. That's both apologetic and it might keep the brain chemistry going to where she won't kill you.
Oh, and that's pretty serious.
No plants should be pruned in the fall. What you saw as out of control growth was simply a happy, healthy plant. What happens when we prune in the fall is sometimes there's like a warm spell after that.
Yes.
And so the plants will begin regrowing. Then it gets cold. And the cold weather then freezes that new sap in the plant. And it can actually kill the plant. So leaving them alone allows them to go into a natural dormancy. They send all their energy down to the root system. This is the time of year when you don't look at your garden. If it really bugs you, if it drives you crazy, you can prune them in the dead of winter when there's no chance they're going to come out of dormancy and regrow. Yeah. But the smartest thing to do is let them go until the spring when they begin regrowing. Then, because they have this vigor shooting up from their crown, then they can take a lot of damage and regrow rapidly, and they're not going to freeze or have anything bad. Now, how much did you whack them?
I took probably half of them off.
Okay, so how tall were they?
They were probably, let's say, 4 to 5 feet high.
Okay, so you whacked them back to around 2 feet.
Yeah, two and a half, yeah.
Okay, and how mad is she?
Well, I mean, she tells me I should leave her stuff alone, and she said I helped her out before. You know, I did help her out before, and I kind of messed up her other tree. But I thought I learned from that, and I was, I'm really worried. You don't think they're going to come back at all, or are they done?
I think they are stressed. Have you noticed any signs of regrowth yet?
You know, some of the branches, there's little reddish buds starting to come out.
Really good chocolate, Ray. Really good dark chocolate.
Belgian. I didn't think it was this bad.
What I want you to do, first of all, do nothing now. When we get to the dead of winter, you can go out and take off any little stuff that has regrown. But that would be it, just the little shoots that you have caused. And then in the spring, allow them to grow for a solid month, and then just let her give them a gentle trimming and shaping. Anytime you want to prune roses or almost any other plant, the best time, if it's not a bloomer, is the dead of winter. If it's a spring bloomer, like azaleas, rhododendrons, lilacs, you prune them right after they flower. If it's roses, you prune them after they've been growing for a couple of weeks.
Well, I think I'll let her handle it. I'm not going to touch. The only thing I'm going to do is just cut and trim the lawn, I've always been doing.
I'll
just stick with the lawnmower.
And good chocolate, really good quality chocolate, Reagan.
Well, whatever it's going to take.
We're talking the big box, Ray. We're talking good chocolate. We're not talking Whitman sampler. We're talking Godiva.
Go for the high end stuff.
Yeah, with a real ribbon on it, And also, maybe for this upcoming holiday, you take the pruners and you put them in a box and you wrap them up and you give them to her. And when she opens up and sees the pruners, there's a note on top that says, "My God, I'm sorry. I'll never touch these again."
Oh, I will. I said maybe I'll hear something really good that I did a pretty good job. But
the only thing good you could have done is maybe stopped some other man from making the same mistake this weekend. But roses are strong. If we don't have like a hellacious winter, they will probably be okay. But don't do it again.
Okay. I will not.
All right. Good luck, Ray.
Thanks, Mike.
1-888-346-9499. Heather, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Heather. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
And where is Heather fine, may I ask?
East Jordan, Michigan.
Oh, okay. What can we do for Heather in Michigan?
I have a question about using pine needles. I guess it's called pine straw.
Yes.
As mulch. Somebody's doing some landscaping for me, and he wants to use landscape fabric and wood mulch to go underneath some shrubs. And I know how you feel about wood mulch, but I'm wondering about pine straw. He doesn't seem to think it's good to use, and I have a ton of pine needles, so it's free mulch if I can use it.
Well, your instincts are 100% correct. First of all, landscape fabric becomes a nightmare after a while. Everybody who's had it installed, one of the biggest issues is how do I get rid of this stuff? They put it down to prevent weeds without thinking that it needs little holes in it so that air and water can pass through to the plants below. Well, that's like a protective shield of armor for grassy weeds, which are the worst weeds, which are the weeds we're trying to guard against.
Right.
But the little blades of grass come up through the holes, and then the mat root system takes over underneath the weed fabric, and you can't get that grass out of there.
Okay, so no landscape fabric. Okay.
No, but they get paid to put it down.
Yeah, right.
With the wood mulch, they get paid twice. They have been... No, you can't landfill these wood chips anymore.
Is that right?
And they've become a big waste disposal problem, whereby you have named one of the greatest mulches on the planet. Pine straw is hugely attractive.
It is. I've got it all piled up because I didn't want to use it in case. Isn't there something to do with it's acidic or something?
People assume that it's acidic because pines in general are acidic. They like growing in acidic soil. But what they fail to realize is that pine straw is very inert. It's almost like ivy in that it has this waxy coating. If you were to take a pile of shredded leaves, they would begin composting very rapidly. Pine straw, because it has this waxy coating, really resists deterioration and breakdown, which is what a lot of people are looking for in a mulch. People talk about evergreens. But in truth, they're not ever. They're kind of semi-deciduous in that every evergreen sheds its needles. on a regular basis.
Yes, I thought the trees were dying because all these needles were falling off, and then I realized they weren't. They were just shedding, doing what the other deciduous trees do in the fall.
Exactly, so. And white pines specifically. I have a white pine in front of my house, and I'm almost always astonished. It seems to drop as many needles as a deciduous tree of its size would drop leaves.
Yeah.
And in both cases, that serves the same purpose to the tree.
Now, will it work as a mulch on vegetables as well as on flowers and bushes and shrubs?
It's better used around ornamentals simply because it gets sharp to work with.
Oh, okay.
That if you use it to mulch your garden, it becomes a pain. It's almost like a hard Christmas tree.
Okay.
They can go through your gloves. They're very difficult to work with. But as a mulch, technically, they're absolutely superb. One of the benefits to the tree of these drop needles is it suppresses the growth of other plants underneath the tree,
yes,
reducing competition. Right, because trees don't want to share.
Right.
So in one sense, I'm always telling people to collect and shred their deciduous trees because this is nature's gift to us.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, nature's a bully, and it's knocking the other plants down.
Right.
So that the tree has more elbow room. So by definition, pine mulch is great at suppressing weeds, and it will not harm any ornamental whatsoever.
Okay.
That you mulch it with, it'll look fabulous. Like I said, technically it makes a good mulch in the vegetable garden, but you get real tired of working that soil after a while.
Okay.
All right, Heather, your instincts are perfect there.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. You take care.
And I enjoy your show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and deliver a money-saving tip. If your local garden center still have spring bulbs for sale, I bet they're marked down to move. Hey, come on, they need all that room for their giant inflatable Homer Simpson Santa displays. So pick up a deal, get the bulbs in the ground, and then watch out for squirrels wearing Bart Simpson masks. But don't go participating in that year-end clearance sale just yet. Because we'll be right back with Green Prints, the Weeder's Digest, and how to harvest your own holiday greens from your own landscape without harming the trees and shrubs. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
This is WHYY.
University of the Sciences in Philadelphia supports WHYY. University of the Sciences offers undergraduate and graduate programs that help prepare students for careers in the sciences and healthcare. Prospective students can attend an open house and learn about starting their career in pharmacy, chemistry, forensic science, occupational therapy, health policy, and more. Information on admissions, financial aid, and campus life are also presented. Open house details at usciences.edu/openhouse.
WHYY programming is supported by the teachers and education support professionals of the Pennsylvania State Education Association, educating all children for a bright future. We are PSEA. Providing the power of a great education.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, the holidays are getting closer, and there's nothing more fun than harvesting some of your own evergreens and hollies to make your own Christmas decorations. But you have to be careful how you do it so that you don't harm the trees and shrubs. We'll tell you how to accomplish that in the question of the week. We're also going to take lots more of your fabulous phone calls. But now it's time to welcome our special guest and an old friend of mine, Pat Stone, the editor of Green Prints magazine, fondly known to its readers as the Weeder's Digest. And the occasion of this interview is a very nice award that Pat and Green Prints have just won in this, their 20th year of publication. Pat Stone, welcome back to You Bet Your Garden.
Good to talk to you, Uncle Michael. How are things?
We are doing very well here, Pat. Things are going a little bit better for you. I understand you have been feted by the Garden Writers Association of America.
I won the Oscar of Gardening for Small Garden Magazines, the best small garden magazine in the country this year. I did. I was very grateful.
And were there contenders, or was this an unopposed race?
You know. Oh, of course there were contenders. No, a lot of people enter. Like 300 people enter these things. I've been a judge once. It's a serious job. It takes you days to judge all the entries.
Now, we should mention in the spirit of full disclosure that ever since I stopped being editor of Organic Gardening magazine, I have continued the column I used to write for Organic Gardening in the pages of your publication at your kind invitation. I think you called me like 3 days after I found out I wouldn't be editor anymore. So I think I've been with Green Prints more than half of its existence.
13 years you've been writing for me, and I'm very grateful. Absolutely. You're one of the big hits in the mag.
And yes, and despite my writing a story for you every issue, yet you won this award. It's mind-boggling.
I think what they were doing was validating what my magazine's doing. Every other garden publication is how-to. It's recipes, it's information, the incredibly valuable know-how you need. But this is completely different. My magazine does the personal side of gardening, the human side, the heart, the humor. Nothing else does that. And yet, really, that's so much of why we garden. And my magazine shares that primarily through the stories of people's personal experiences. It's a kind of an odd idea. It's different than everything else. And I think giving me that award was one way they're saying, that's not a bad thing you're doing. It's actually pretty good.
But what drove you to launch a gardening magazine that would distinctly have no tips, have no gardening advice, have no USDA zone charts or maps or recommended varieties?
I really did feel like the soul of gardening was not being shared. We garden for food, we garden for flowers, but we also garden for love, for that relationship between us and the plants, for what we get out of nurturing the plants. And nothing was really sharing that, and I started a magazine to share it. I think stories are the best way to share that because they come straight from the author's heart to your heart. And once I started doing that, people really responded. I've had people that tell me that this magazine helped them survive cancer. It helped them survive the death of their mother. It touches people personally. I mean, it's funny. Your stories are hilarious. But even that's part of a relationship because they're like family stories, the things that happen in your own family, the goofs that other relatives make, those kind of stories. That's what Green Prints shares. It's got a whole lot of dimensions that are very valuable parts of gardening that no other magazine has.
When you got started, though, you had an idea, a wife who's probably in a blind panic. And where did you get your first stories from?
I basically polled people I knew, people like Becky Roop and just other writers, Jeff Taylor, and then pulled some excerpts from other things and stories that I'd seen that didn't quite work from other news. I contacted those authors. But once the word got out, I get stories from Australia, from, Canada, from all over the world now because I'm the outlet for this. I'm sort of the folklorist of personal garden stories.
And I know this is putting you on the spot, and there are so many stories that have run for 20 years now. And again, congratulations on being recognized by the Garden Writers for being the best small gardening magazine out there. Is there a story that was just so special to you that really epitomized what this was all about, this human side of gardening?
If I had to pick one favorite story, and I really can't do it, but the one that comes to my mind so often, it's called My 90 Acres. It's a classic by Louis Bromfield.
Oh, sure.
About a farmer whose wife was deceased, who helped him become a better farmer. He was such a good, sensitive farmer. And at the end of the story, you realize he's almost making love to his farm. Almost showing his love for his wife through the way he cares for his farm. He's almost merged the two in his mind. It's a beautiful classic story that very few people have read.
Well, and he's one of the great garden writers of all time.
Absolutely, and a great agriculturalist. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, Pat Stone, congratulations on both your 20th anniversary of keeping this puppy alive. Green Prints of the Weeders Digest. And I understand if our listeners want to check it out, obviously you have a website that is greenprints.com. But last time I checked, you had a bunch of sample stories up there that people could read.
Absolutely, including the very first story you wrote for Green Prints about getting splatted in the face by tomatoes.
Actually, I thought somebody was throwing tomatoes at my car. It shows you how long it is. You've forgotten the story. It turns out it was drunken birds feasting on my fermented crabapple tree.
I wasn't going to give that part away.
Well, I give everything away, you know. And obviously, you've been given
to sell things.
You've been given a lot away too. All right, Pat. Congratulations again on the award. It is a rare honor. Pat Stone is the editor of Green Prints, the Weeders Digest. Just won the Garden Writers Quill and Trowel Award for the best small gardening publication. 20th year anniversary, and you can learn more about them at greenprints.com. Pat, good luck. Keep publishing, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much, Mr. Mike. Talk to you later.
And now, back to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Lisa, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for making it. Lisa, where are you?
Well, I am in Philadelphia currently, but the garden that I'm working on is in Villas, New Jersey.
Villas, V-I-L-L-A-S?
Yes, just outside of Cape May on the Bayside, 2 blocks from the bay.
Oh, okay. So that must be very pretty. How far to the ocean?
To get into Cape May, it's about 10 minutes, between 10 and 15 minutes.
So you can't walk to the ocean?
No, not really, but I can walk my dog to the bay, which is dog-friendly, so you can go there any time of year, and that's delightful.
Hey, Wildwood is in Cape May, and you can't walk to the ocean there from the boardwalk. It's still 3 miles till you get to the water.
That's a good point. And the Bayside is quieter, so it's very, very nice there.
What can we do for Lisa just outside of Cape May?
Well, my question is a little bit two-part. This snow that happened in October threw me into a state of panic because I was moving plants from my Philadelphia garden down to the New Jersey garden, as it's a new garden. I've had the house about a year. Nobody's had done anything prior to me being there. So I had all these plants I'm moving down, and then it snows. And then I get down there, and these goofy irises that I planted last fall are coming up.
Yes, those are unrelated. For those people who weren't glued to the Weather Channel feeling superior, because for once we had the worst weather in the entire country, parts of our area got socked. I personally, being out in the country, got 12 inches of wet snow. We were without power for 5 days. But even before that, the plants were whacked out because we had an incredibly torrid, dry spring. And then we had a hellaciously wet summer. And then, of course, it snows before Halloween. So it's either climate change or the end of days. I'm not quite sure which it is. But a lot of people's spring bloomers sent their flowers out this fall. And there's really nothing you can do about it. Look at the flowers, enjoy them, and hope that the plants have enough vigor to survive this.
Well, that was the problem. They weren't flowering. They just had these spindly little green shoots coming out with no flower.
Right. And there's really no good answer for what does a human do. My advice might be, if they really look that pitiful, to take them up out of the ground, store them inside in some mildly damp peat moss like you would a summer blooming bulb, a tender bulb, and plant them in the spring, and certainly light a couple of candles to saints that have flowers in their name. You know?
Okay. And what to do about transplanting plants this time of year?
Well, what kind of plants?
Some lilies. I had some Rose of Sharon, which really objected to being moved.
Yeah, well, this was not the best time. You kind of jumped the gun.
Yeah.
What I would suggest anyone do who has to move plants now, get the new site prepared. Dig all the new holes. Wait until the plants are fully dormant, and then move them into their new holes. It may be a little bit of work to get them out of their somewhat frozen ground at home, but when you move plants when they're dormant, it's like carrying a 4-year-old in from the van at 2 o'clock in the morning. You can bang their head against a couple of doorways. They're not going to wake up. Yeah, full dormancy is the best time. Things that bloom in the spring, probably it's best to let them go through that bloom cycle, cut them back after the flowers have faded, and then move them in the spring. But think about when the plants are either asleep or they're strongest. Right now, they're trying to go dormant, and you're disturbing their dormancy, which is only going to suck some of the life out of them.
So what determines dormancy? Obviously, lately, it's not the time of year because the weather's so erratic. So what would determine dormancy?
You know, when a herbaceous perennial is no longer visible above ground, when all the trees have lost all their leaves, and that happened like a month ago, you know, when the weather has been reliably cold for a while. In truth, the safest time to move plants like this is when it's almost physically impossible in the middle of winter.
So the later the better, as long as you can get a spade into the ground.
Correct. And
okay.
if you miss it, you know, spring when they're regrowing and at their most vigorous is also a very good time.
Okay, great.
All right?
All right, Mike, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Good luck.
All right, bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Ed, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Mike, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling you from Berwyn, Pennsylvania.
Very good. Very good. What can we do for Ed in beautiful Berwyn?
Here's my problem. I have five daughters. And for my birthday in spring of this year, they purchased from me, from a Texas grower, a Lisbon lemon tree.
Mm-hmm.
This thing comes in a box. It's bare-rooted.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a twig.
Right.
It's about 10 inches tall, and it has a few leaves on it and about three or four blossoms.
Mm-hmm.
So I take it out of the box, and I put it in a pot, a clay pot, and it comes around May when it starts getting warm, and all the leaves have fallen off, and all the blossoms have fallen off, so I stick it in good old Mother Earth. Well, by September, this little twig is 3 feet tall.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it loves it there. I don't water it. I don't fertilize it. I don't
mm-hmm.
do anything. I just look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But no blossoms, which means no fruit.
Ed, the lack of blossoms is the least of your worries here.
Okay.
Citrus does not survive a Pennsylvania winter outdoors.
I took it in about a week ago.
Oh, okay. Well, you left out the most important part.
Sorry.
Now, when you planted it in, quote, good Mother Earth, did you plant it in the pot or did you take it out?
I took it out of the pot and put it right in the earth.
Okay. And then when we brought it back inside last week, how did we do this?
Took a shovel and dug it up and put it into, about an 18-inch clay pot.
Okay. What is your fascination with clay pots here, Ed? Because they're part of the problem.
None particularly.
Okay. Terracotta is very attractive. It kind of almost goes hand in hand with potted plants. We think of them. We think of terracotta pots. But terracotta is very porous. It wicks its moisture into the air. It's very osmotic. It's very difficult to keep evenly watered. And one of the enemies of indoor citrus is drying out. Now, I will tell you, did it drop its leaves when you brought it back inside?
No, it's fine. It looks beautiful.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. And what kind of a location do we have it in?
I have it in in front of south-facing twin French doors.
Oh, perfect, perfect. And is it safe from a lot of drafts or heat in that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, your lack of flowers is simply probably the result of it having been such a young plant. Citrus is essentially a fruit tree. All of these fruit trees are long-lived. They take a while to get established. I'm worried about the clay pot. I would prefer that you repot it into a plastic pot. It needs to be kept a little moister than other houseplants, but don't overwater it. Don't water it every day. And if you have a protective saucer underneath it to protect the surface from runoff, don't let water accumulate in the saucer.
Okay. Should I be fertilizing it with anything over the winter?
In the spring. No, not in the winter. Although, you may be surprised, these citrus tend to fruit in a reverse season than we're normal to. So it would not surprise me at all if flowers appeared around Christmas time.
Okay.
Did you have access to any kind of compost or anything like that?
I do.
When you repot it into its plastic pot, put a couple of inches of compost on the surface of the soil. That way it'll get a gentle feeding of compost tea every time you water the plant.
Okay.
The plastic will not wick its moisture into the air. It'll be easier to retain moisture, keep it evenly watered. It sounds like the light is spectacular. Don't forget to rotate the tree, like every day, give it a quarter turn, or every week turn it around to face the other way, or else it's going to start leaning towards those doors.
Okay.
And in the summertime, do the same thing you did this year, but keep it in the pot. Take it outside and just let it summer outside. You can plant the pot, you can leave the pot out on a surface, it doesn't matter. But typically, you're going to get your flowers in a very late fall, early winter, if I'm correct.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate your advice.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn all of the spring bulb procrastinators out there to just get over yourselves and get the bad word bulbs into the ground. No excuses. Do it now or give them to somebody who will. This isn't about you, it's about the bulbs. And please don't email me in late January asking what you can do then, other than to send money in my birthday card. I hate opening them things up when nothing falls out. But don't go sending pictures of presidents to the 21st Century Soupy Sales just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to safely harvest some holiday greenery from your landscape. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY.
Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. The Scott Arboretum of Swarthmore College will hold 5 holiday greens workshops from Thursday, December 1st through Saturday the 3rd. And they'll host their annual holiday greens sale on Saturday, December 3rd from 10 to 2. The Country Gardeners of Lima will hold their annual holiday greens sale on Saturday, December 3rd at the Tyler Arboretum in Media, PA from 9:30 to 1:30. Christ Church Christiana in Greenville, Delaware will hold its annual holiday green show and sale on Saturday, December 3rd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And Historic Bartram's Garden will host their holiday green sale on December 3rd and 4th from 10 to 4. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
Coming up on today's Fresh Air Weekend, Jason Siegel and Nick Stoller talk about reviving the Muppets on the silver screen. Siegel and Stoller co-wrote the latest Muppets movie. Also, we'll hear an interview and audience Q&A with Francis Ford Coppola, recorded at this year's Toronto International Film Festival. Join us for Fresh Air Weekend at 1 today here on WHYY. Forecast for today, not too bad, mostly sunny, high temperature 65, and a carbon copy for Sunday. Right now it's 58 degrees.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. I'm always warning you that fall is not for pruning. But what about trimming some evergreens and holidays to make your own wreaths, swags, garland, and other holiday greens? Well, it's a tender trap that we'll be falling into when we explain how to do that and avoid the fall pruning mistake at the same time. You won't want to miss it. And you won't. What comes up right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Susanna, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am doing just fine today, Susanna. How are
you? Such
a
treat to talk to you. It's been years that I've been trying to talk to you. This is great.
Are you a first-time getter-thrower?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Where are you?
I'm an Ambler.
A local listener out of our Philadelphia area. What can we do for Susanna in Ambler, Pennsylvania?
Well, this is my question. I was putting away all my pots for the winter outside, and I ripped out something that I thought was a weed, and at the bottom of this was a big avocado pit, And I came in and asked my kids, did somebody plant an avocado? And they said, well, yes, we did. And so I put it back in the pot, and I brought it inside, and I'm trying to see if I can grow an avocado tree in Ambler in the winter.
The basic answer is yes. You should be able to keep your avocado tree alive over the winter in Ambler, Pennsylvania. And then you can either decide you're going to treat it as a house plant all year long, or you can let it go outside for summer vacation and bring it back inside. It is not winter hardy. How old are your children?
6, 8, and 11. And my 8-year-old has an oak tree that is her pet already that she has in a container. So now my youngest one, he wants a pet tree also. So I feel pressure not to, you know, kill it over the winter.
Now, the avocado is a tropical, and that doesn't need to go through dormancy. I don't think it knows what dormancy is. You know, typically they're all grown down in California. And what kind of light do you have?
I have it right now in a deep sill with northeast-facing light away from the heater. But it does seem to get a lot of light, but I think it had a lot of direct sunlight outside, and I'm giving as much sunlight as I can, but maybe only 3 hours of direct sunlight a day.
And yeah, but you've already been cruel to it, right? You ripped it out of its pot?
I did, but the soil was very loose, and the root system still looked good. But yeah, I did kind of rip it out. I thought
okay.
It was a weed.
And then you put it back together again. You apologized to it, and you put it into the window, but it didn't drop all its leaves or anything?
No, it didn't. It still has a nice, beautiful top. The leaves haven't dropped. They haven't changed color.
Okay, so how long has it been inside?
About 4 weeks.
Oh, okay. You're doing excellently. As the days get shorter, as the angle of the light changes, as we get deeper into the winter, you may want to give it some artificial light. The best thing to do would be to set up a shop light with 2 4-foot-long 40-watt tubes and have the tree growing right underneath the shop light. That would keep up its rate of growth quite a bit. It sounds like you might be skirting with enough light for it to get by. I think these are pretty bulletproof as houseplants. If you do give it artificial light, you would water it a little bit more often. I wouldn't feed it till the spring. If you don't give it artificial light, just keep an eye on it. Keep it in the window where it is. You're very correct to keep it away from a heat source like the radiator. Give it as much light as you can, but have a very light hand with the water.
Okay.
Because without a lot of light, it will process things like water and food much more slowly. So the danger in winter is that we overwater our houseplants. The corollary is you do have to pay attention because some houses get very dry in the winter. So just rock the pot. Get used to how the pot feels when it's saturated. Get used to how the pot feels when the soil is bone dry. And try to keep it right in the middle. No matter how long it's been, if the pot is still very heavy, don't water it. But the corollary is also true. If you live in the kind of house where that when the kids are fighting, all they have to do is rub their feet on the floor and then touch each other, then, you know, you can water anytime the pot feels light. But it sounds like your instincts here are strong and good and the plants want to live. I have high hopes for this avocado.
Thank you so much. I'm really, really excited.
You're doing great.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you. Take care.
You too.
1-888-346-9499. Becky, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I am doing very well today. Beck, how are you?
I'm great.
And where is Becky great?
Becky is great in South Jersey, a little bit outside of Atlantic City.
Okay, very good, very good. Are the gaming tables kind to you there?
I do not even go in there.
All right, what can we do for Becky just outside of Atlantic City?
Okay, I'm questioning on my chrysanthemums. Every year, and I have some that actually do come up year after year, and I know to pinch them back in the spring when they come up.
Right.
But evidently I'm not doing it enough or whatever. But this year they got very, very leggy, very tall.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they bloomed, they just all fell down. It looked like somebody laid in the middle of the plant.
Well, you realize, because these are all mums that you've bought at a garden center in the fall because they're all perfect and bushy, and it's like this giant palette of purple or yellow or orange, right?
Right.
And the artificiality of the plant and the manner in which it was raised is the only reason that the plants look like that. Once they escape the tender mercy of the greenhouse, they tend to revert to form. So you can replicate the greenhouse mum, but it is tedious in the extreme. Now, you are correct in that the way to keep them compact is to keep pinching them back from the time they wake up in the spring, unfortunately, until like late summer, when you finally get to leave them alone, and then these flowers that have been trying to form for, what, 4 months, finally get let loose, and they will make that same beautiful, dense head on fairly compact stems. But it don't happen naturally. Really, you would need to pinch them back or shear them back literally every week through the early part of the growing season. It's like topiary. You're never allowed to go away. You're never allowed to not pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And for most people, it's just too much trouble. But if it's your idea of a good time and you want to prove something to yourself, it can certainly be done.
But if you don't do it, then they're definitely going to get the long-stemmed. And once the flowers bloom, unless I have them tied up or something, they're just going to fall over.
Well, you would also have the option of, once they bloomed on those long stems, to bring them inside as cut flowers.
Which I do, but I mean, these were huge. I could have done a whole banquet hall with as many as the flowers were this year.
And you're complaining?
No, it's just that they just all laid down and, you know, just look terrible. That was the problem.
Yes, outside, they really do require a lot of attention. I am led to believe that it is not as effective to, like, cut them back midsummer and hope that they work well. How many plants, how many, you know, crowns do you have?
I'm going to do a quick thing of maybe 12.
Okay. You know, you might want to experiment next year. And, you know, I think this would always be easier in potted plants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to have them close to the house, and then you know that every Sunday you're going to get out there with the pruners or your fingers, and you're going to pinch them back, or you're going to cut them back an inch or two.
Mm-hmm.
And then some others, a couple of mums, I would let them grow for a month. Cut them back, let them grow for a month and cut them back. And then in the final experiment, I would let some grow until like July and then cut them back hard and see what happens.
Okay.
I'm led to believe you will get the most compact heads from the constant attention. I think the cutting back midsummer, if the plant doesn't get too stressed by it, would still keep the flowers closer to the crown of the plant, but I don't think you would get that compact habit where the flowers are like crushed up against each other. I think that takes the weekly pinching or light pruning.
Okay, well, it doesn't have to look like greenhouse. I just wanted it to look nicer, so when people drove by, they just weren't all just laying down on the ground. So
yeah, it looks like my garden. Yeah, well, why don't you try those? Why don't you try weekly, monthly, and then one big whack mid-season? I think all three are going to be improved compared to just cutting them back a little bit in the spring and then ignoring them. But I almost guarantee you're going to get your best results. You're going to be the most happy with the ones that were tedious that you paid attention to at least once a week.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it very much.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck back. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week, a fall pruning reminder with some special rules about holiday greens. Our question this week comes from Carol in Wynwood, PA, who writes, "Mike, you have given us guidelines about when not to prune, quote, the fall. But I could use a rule of thumb for when it is officially that time in the Philadelphia suburbs where I live. After which date or natural phenomena, should one no longer prune live wood until obvious winter? That's a great question, Carol, and I have to admit that the answer is a little slippery. If such a drop-dead date did exist, it would have to be tempered greatly by your USDA growing zone and the reality of your then current and upcoming weather. Maybe the best way to approach this is to break it down into the three kinds of plants we gardeners most feel the need to prune. The first category is spring bloomers, like azaleas, rhododendrons, lilacs, forsythia, dogwoods, and, quote, fruit trees, both edible and ornamental. Gardeners really should do all this kind of pruning within a month of the flowers having faded in the spring, for several reasons. One, it removes any unwanted seed heads that would otherwise sap energy from the plant if left in place. Second, it is the safest time of year to dramatically reshape plants and cut overgrown specimens back, as the plants are at their most vigorous and can recover fast. And you won't risk removing any developing flower buds and thus lessen the following year's show. Now, can you safely prune those plants a month later? Almost certainly. Ah, but a month after that, however, summer may be slapping them around with a torrid hand. Any seed heads would have already finished sucking all that vigor from the plant, and you're now in the window where you are beginning to risk accidental flower bud removal. By the time you get to midsummer, heat stress is reason enough to play hide the pruners. And from then on, you know the buds are all fully formed and pruning will turn your spring show into a no-show. Summer blooming shrubs and trees? Well, they're blooming in the summer. The only pruning you should do then is to cut flowers for indoor display. And this you should do, especially with roses, most varieties of which will respond to such a cut with another run of blooms, perhaps several times. But as the days get shorter and you experience that first August night that tempts you to turn on the heat, oh, come on, honey, just a little bit, the pruners should go away. Your plants are beginning to settle into their first stages of dormancy, and cutting them now will sap some of the vigor they need to get through a harsh winter. You want a date, a time, a sign? August pruning should be for cut flowers for indoor display only. And as soon as you see the first school buses taking their young prisoners back and forth to the penitentiary, the pruners should be sharpened, oiled, and stored safely away. Now, the third group we prune is deciduous trees, which are best pruned when you don't want to in the dead of winter. Most of these trees can also be pruned in the spring, but be sure to look up your specific tree first to make sure that it isn't a Chuck Wepner bleeder that sends sap sailing when it's pruned in the spring, like maples. Always prune those types mid-winter. Now, I understand the impulse, temptation, itch to prune in September. The weather is nice, the tomatoes are shot, summer's over, we're bored, and all we have to look forward to is replacing that boredom with depression. Of course we want to go out and prune. Same with November, which may be the worst month to cut, however. The plants are three-quarters dormant by then, and stimulating new growth by pruning is sure to both sap their strength and cause weak new growth that'll be very prone to winter injury, especially if that warm day that lured you into pruning is followed by a few more warm days and then a hard freeze. Ouch goes the plant. December, however, brings both challenge and opportunity. The plants are deeper into their REM-like sleep, and the holidays during which many of us infest our homes with greenery are fast approaching. So while spring bloomers and deciduous trees should still be left alone, overgrown evergreens deserve a closer look. For instance, I have a big old blue spruce that, if left untouched, is going to work its way into the power lines in a few years. This summer, I convinced the electric company's tree whackers to leave it alone so that I may carefully fell it far away from the power lines mid-December. I'll use all of the lower branches to make wreaths, swags, and garlands, and then I'll prune the top topiary style to make this year's Christmas tree for our house. Doesn't matter how ratty the bottoms of these old trees get, the tops are always perfect. Of course, this is culling, not pruning. In a typical year, I'll instead harvest whole evergreen branches that are either beginning to brown out or that are getting in my way. I'll wait as long into December as I can. I'll put it off if any freak warm spells are predicted, and I'll harvest only entire branches to limit the possibility of regrowth. Same with hollies and other winter berry bearers. Come mid-December, I'll take the same chance and harvest entire branches during a cold spell, and use those cuttings to top off my evergreen arrangements. Yes, I should wait another month, but most seasons the weather is cold enough to do safely. And come on, what am I supposed to do with holly branches in January? Well, that sure was an interesting look at how to do a little early pruning to make your own holiday greens, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, this and every question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To carefully review the information in detail, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes! My producer is threatening to prune me during a warm spell if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live in the email. Put the actual subject of the email in that thing that says subject line. And check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our Garden Answers A to Z section, and or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our webmasters are Baneful Rich Panowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. The well-pruned Alexis Landis has a new title. She is now producer, co-editor, and chief executive bottle washer of You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. She would also be our lion tamer, but she doesn't have the right kind of chair. Our production assistant, Julia Worski, says she has a chair. If she shows up with a whip next week, I'm moving to AM. When asked if he had a whip, our editor, Al Banks, pleaded nolo contendere. He took the fifth and went looking for a chair. I'm King of the Forest, Mike McGrath, and wait a minute. I'll see you next week. Many people install chemical trenches around their homes to prevent termites. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss how long these tunnels remain toxic and safer ways to protect your home. Plus your fabulous phone calls.
Mike has hands-on advice for hibiscus, hawthorn, honeydew, honeysuckle, whatever the harvest, find him here Saturday mornings at 11 on WHYY. I'm Marty.